pop superstar Taylor Swift swept the American Music Awards last night, winning in 6 categories, including Artist of the Year.
I have the fans to thank, essentially, for my happiness. And I love you more than I can say.
Many of her fans, though, are still unhappy after major glitches crashed the online sale for tickets to her upcoming tour. The company in charge of ticket sales, Ticketmaster, is now the target of many lawmakers and attorneys general, quite possibly the DOJ itself, and legions of devastated Swifties. Here to talk about how we got here is Dean Budnick. He is editor-in-chief of the music magazine Relics and co-author of the book Ticketmasters, The Rise of the Concert Industry and How the Public Got Scalped. Welcome to Press Play, Dean.
Thank you.
Okay, so this ticket debacle started with a pre-sale last Tuesday, and her biggest fans would get special early access to tickets before anyone else, but it turned out that that was the only day any tickets would be sold. And so that crashed the site, and lots of people were unhappy. What happened, and how did this happen?
Well, what happened is a few things. First off, beyond the people who were given the actual codes, there were some individuals who were held in reserve in case those people, in case all those tickets didn't sell through initially, many of whom rushed in. But above and beyond that, there were any number of folks who didn't have codes who wanted to try to buy tickets. There were some Taylor Swift fans who simply figured, what the heck, I might as well give it a go. And there were plenty of people who wanted to try to buy tickets so that they could then resell them to Taylor Swift fans. And among these, there were some individuals who deployed bots, you know, computer algorithms that are meant to sort of brute force the system so they could bypass some of the safety mechanisms and get in and grab some tickets.
Okay, so is this the first time that this has happened, or is this an ongoing problem with Ticketmaster?
Well, listen, on this scale, right, because here you had 47 stadium shows essentially being sold simultaneously. Some of the West Coast dates were pushed a little bit later in the date. But, I mean, bots are sort of an ongoing issue for Ticketmaster. It's happened off and on over the years. There was a Bruce Springsteen on sale, not the most recent one, but a one a number of years back, where there were all these bots crashing the system. Ticketmaster does actively do what it can to revise its system, to police it and the like in an attempt to push back the bots, but it's sort of a cat and mouse game, as it's been described to me.
Okay, well, let's talk about Ticketmaster and how big it got, because it's owned by Live Nation, which is also the biggest live events company in the United States. And so how does that partnership, if you will, work?
Sure. Well, I mean, in theory, there is something of a firewall between the two, because I think when Live Nation and Ticketmaster came together in 2010, some people feared that when, you know, Ticketmaster sales team went out and tried to get new clients, and to be clear, their clients are essentially the venues out there, that they would intimidate individuals by saying, listen, if you're not going to use Ticketmaster, then you're not going to have Live Nation artists come through your facility. So, I mean, that's, you know, that part and parcel is some of what, you know, is going on behind the scenes, some concerns relative to that. But above and beyond that, Ticketmaster has become so huge by simply reconfiguring the game. They altered the nature of the business model for ticketing. This happened in the early 1980s. Previously, tickets were something of an expense for an arena, for a facility that you would use in an attempt to sort of market your shows, get them out there to fans, to would-be concertgoers through you know, remote access and the like. And Ticketmaster, at that moment, decided they were going to change things a little bit. Service fees were low, but Ticketmaster, under the leadership of Fred Rosen, the CEO, went out to all these arenas and said, hey, what would you think if we doubled the service fees? And the arenas said, at first, why would we want to do that, with the thought that it would detract people from buying tickets? And Rosen's team said, well, if we do that, we will share the revenue with you. And so instantly this became a revenue source rather than an expense, and Ticketmaster went around the country winning new contracts with venues, and these contracts were exclusive. Ticketmaster would say, you have to have an exclusive arrangement with us, you have to let us sell 100% of your ticket inventory, and in exchange, we'll give you an advance against the service fees, and we'll give you a signing bonus. And so as Ticketmaster went out, starting again in 1982, increasingly it became very easy to sign on new venues who were more than willing to have this new revenue source come in.
Yeah. And then so now there's only this one outlet pretty much selling tickets to concerts across the country, right? And then you have this one site. And then if there's an overwhelming demand, as we saw last week with Taylor Swift concerts, it can be overwhelmed. So how is this being policed or not policed by federal and state authorities if actually the Justice Department approved this merger in the first place?
Well, that is a great question. All that the Justice Department did when it approved this merger in 2010 and then reaffirmed it in 2019 is it said, don't intimidate venues when you're trying to get new clients. But what it didn't say, what it didn't necessarily think, was that Ticketmaster was any form of a monopoly. And if you were to listen to Ticketmaster, they would say, listen, we're not a monopoly. We only do 25% of the ticketing nationwide. And that's probably essentially true, but that 25% includes, junior high school basketball games and, local, right. Whatever it would be.
Understood.
But if you look at the big events, like the top 100 arenas in this country, Ticketmaster has exclusive contracts with 80 of them. And the fact, by the way, that Ticketmaster has this relationship with Live Nation means that it has deep pockets so that it can go out and secure new clients or maintain the clients that it has because it can offer them large signing bonuses and it can offer them large advances against service fees. And by the way,
okay.
Go ahead.
Sorry, we just have a few seconds left. So I just want to ask really quickly, do you think that this will be the straw that breaks the proverbial camel's back with the Justice Department and they may look into breaking up Live Nation and Ticketmaster?
It's tough to call. It's really tough to say because, this came up again. This has come up a couple times with Springsteen. This came up with Hannah Montana. An early iteration of this came up with Pearl Jam. People get worked up for a short period of time. And then they move on to other things. I mean, maybe post-COVID, public policy, will decide as a country or Congress will decide that music is so much enmeshed within necessary culture of the United States that we have to do something. But I think that remains to be seen. Every time in the past this has been raised, it's been business as usual.
All right. Dean Budnick, co-author of the book Ticketmasters, The Rise of the Concert Industry and How the Public Got Scalped. Dean, thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Coming up, another Supreme Court decision involving reproductive rights was leaked 8 years ago. It was written by Justice Samuel Alito, who also wrote the leaked Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade. We'll discuss with our legal eagle, Jessica Levinson, next on Press Play.